To another episode of the Collapsing Game Shelf. I am Tom, and I am joined by
Justin,
Adam,
and Debbie.
And today we are going to be talking about Menu Masters by Calliope Games, a game about making a menu. It says 3 courses, 4 stars, maximum fun. You guys think that's accurate?
I thought it was fun. I thought it was good. Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun.
Spoiler alert! I thought it was a good game.
Yeah, we're just gonna jump to the end.
I don't know. Like, the one thing that I don't know, maybe my stupid comment of the hour is going to be, I don't know that you're making a menu like that to me. I mean, sure. I get it, but I kind of, I don't know.
Because that's what you're trying to build, right? So, like, in the game, you're trying to fulfill menu cards, right? So, like, you have menu cards that you're trying to build, right? So, your menu card usually consists of some sort of vegetable, some sort of a protein, possibly a dessert thrown in there.
I know. I feel like that's more of like an order, not a menu.
You're given a menu and you have to fulfill the order.
Yeah.
That's how I looked at it.
Okay. That's all right.
And so the menu part of it kind of throws me off a little bit. So even on the front of the box when they're like, yeah, build a menu. It's the menu piece to me is a little odd. But I get it. It's all good.
It's just a name, I think, you know.
It's a name for an objective card that you have to fulfill.
Yeah.
So yeah,
it's the points.
It's a flavor. It's a theme, right? It's a skin that they've pasted
on. A flavor.
That's right.
On the,
yeah, see what I did there?
Ooh. I did.
So chefy. So you, in this game, you get your 4 best friends together, and each one of you picks one of the chefs. Hold on. I'm going to go grab one.
I like the fact that you said you get your 4 best friends together.
Well, you get 4 people together. It plays up to 5.
Yep.
You can play maximum of 5 people. I can only imagine how
this
would
play.
Yeah,
but you get your 3 best friends together, no?
No, you get, well, you get however
get
many.
One,
you can get
one
you and your
4.
Spouse together if you want.
You get 1 to 4 warm bodies.
All right, we'll semantics. Like, how many does this actually play?
2 to 5.
2 to 5.
2 to 5. So I was right.
You were.
We only played it with 4. You get yourself your chef board, which are one of 6 different colors. You can be Chef Henri Victome, Bistro Damas, who's just a fat French guy.
Bistro Damas, that's wicked.
I think French.
Does that mean? What does that mean?
It looks like a Nostradamus of the bistro.
Maybe? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
That's wicked.
Pretty ambiguous.
Good name. Good name.
Chef Evangeline Price at Chef Treme. Chef Mari Hinamana. Nope. Chef Mari Hinami at the Curran Steakhouse.
That was Adam.
Yep.
Or the red player, as we call it.
That's me.
Chef Juan Sandoval.
Oh.
This is the green player. Oh. Chef.
Yeah.
Nope. Not going to try. not going to try that one either. Anyway. 6 colors. You get one. They're all the same. Doesn't matter.
I like that they do have a little backstory.
They do.
Yeah, it's cute. They got a little blurb on the back. This is kind of nice. You know, might as well use the space you got. Actually,
and
I think about it, there's nothing on the back. Oh, no. This is where you keep your ingredients.
Yeah.
And they're from different countries, right? Like, they're all different cuisines.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah,
good
lets,
flavor.
It lets you pick
that.
Either your favorite color or your favorite style of food.
Yeah, so I get that. That's a little extra flavor pointage for them. I get it.
So much there's flavor just laced all over this game.
Ooh.
Yeah, I feel like the word of the day is going to be flavor.
We're going into flavor town.
It's got good flavor.
Drinking a beer that has plenty of flavor.
Oof.
It's quite gross.
Not good. Not good.
Have you entered flavor town?
Yeah, right on the hops train. It's not a good train to be on.
Yeah, I feel like I entered Flavortown, had to throw up at a roadside diner.
I think that is Flavortown, yeah.
Not much of an
IPA. That's how you know you're in Flavortown, huh?
Yeah.
Not a ton of IPA fans in this room, I'll tell you that.
So anyway, you get yourself your chef. That provides you with the 3 slots, I think, that you get to hold your ingredients. Looking around the room to see if there's an affirmative on that.
That's correct, yep,
that.
Yep.
All right, nailed it. Haven't played this in a couple weeks, so I don't remember everything, which is a great way to be providing information to everyone. But anyway, you get some money.
You're not supposed to mention that part.
It's fine. Nobody's listening to this. So there's a bunch of hats. The hats look like thimbles. Yeah, I guess they're less four. Like hats. They're more like
Sharpie thimbles. Lids.
Yeah, Sharpie lids. They could look more like chef hats, but they're supposed to be chef hats.
But they're stackable this way.
Yeah, that's good. I think the stackable thing's stackable. Good.
Yeah. Which will come into later.
That's correct. That's
important. Anyway, in the middle of the board, you put down your supermarket, your veggie stand, your butcher shop, and your seafood shop. And over the course of every round, you're going to end up with a bunch of food in each of these shops. And basically the whole game is you getting an objective card, which tells you what you need to make a particular menu item, which will provide you with points. And you are going to be going through each of the markets, like trying to snap up items. The way it works is that the person that gets there first ends up being on the top of the stack of hat lids.
I don't think that's the choice. The first person to get there can be the shop owner.
Well, yeah, so it'll go around. Everyone gets a turn to put their chef hat on the board. You can either put it in the store, like on a food item, just in the store, and that means you're going to go buy an item of food. And then when it comes to the next round, where it's purchasing order, it's whoever is on the top. So it's the last person to enter that store to buy stuff is the first person to get a chance to buy an item.
At the most expensive price.
Or is it from the bottom?
No, it's from the top. It's from the top down.
Yes,
but you're the most expensive, right?
You have to pay for everybody underneath you.
Yeah.
But you get first
dibs. You get first dibs.
Wait. If only there was a book that came in the game that gave instructions on how all of this worked.
This was the thing that confused me because I'm going to look it up, which is super unprofessional, but I don't care. But I think the thing that stuck with me was how weird it was that when you got there first, you could choose to be the store owner, which means that everyone pays you, or you get like first pick, but that means that everybody has to put their hats underneath you, and that's why like the stacking seemed weird to me. I vaguely remember that.
Yeah, I seem to recall that.
I think it's the other manual.
Yeah. Do 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 do.
Still looking.
Boop boop boop. But doom 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 do do.
Feel like this is a copyright issue.
This is my own arrangement.
Yeah. Right. So it's first in, first out. So whoever puts their thing on first is at the top of the stack. But the person at the top of the stack, you have to pay for every person that's underneath you.
Right.
So you have the first choice of items at the market, but you have to pay the most potentially. If everybody else is interested in the other items, you will have to pay more than the people who are at the bottom. And you can always pass. So yeah, you put your thing on, and if you're the first person, or if no one's claimed the store, you can decide to be the store owner, or you can put yourself in as being a purchaser. But if you're the second person, you have to put your hat underneath the other person's hat.
Mm-hmm. I like the concept of owning the store as well, because it can be very strategic if you know everybody else is going after one food group. You can just hop in there and buy the store because you know you don't want to buy any of that stuff.
But you have to not want to buy that stuff,
well,
right?
Exactly. So it's a little bit of it's an interesting little meta game within it where you have to decide what's worth more. Getting more food items or just trying to rake in money if you know there's going to be bidding war for like a single piece of steak. That's the only steak on the board.
Well, I mean, there's also the rule in there where if you are a store owner, you cannot shop at that store. You cannot shop at a store that you own. So it adds more complexity to it because you have to decide I see that one piece of steak, for example, that hasn't popped up in an absolute dog's age, but at the same time. Sure, like I want that piece of steak to complete my item, but at the same time, I know it's going to be a bidding war to get it. So, what do I do? Which side do I take?
You take the money.
Fair enough. I guess that's one way to do it. But money doesn't get you victory points.
No, it doesn't. But I remember when we were playing, I ran out of money a couple times.
True.
And,
true.
You can't buy groceries if you have no money.
That's true, but you can also, like, it's very easy to decide that you see, like, this is a very classic Adam and Debbie thing, is I see my spouse owns that store and I do not wish to support my spouse. Therefore, I am going to go out of my way to choose a different store.
Just a little hate drafting.
Well, and it's super frustrating, right? I mean, that's part of the gameplay, right? Is that you're, you know.
But I think that's what adds to some interesting strategy, where you can have to kind of read the table of the other chefs. And you have to think, it's like, well, he bought that, you know, but I know everyone doesn't want to give him money because he's winning. So I'm going to go buy that store because I know they're going to all go there.
Yeah.
And I'll go to that store because I'll be able to get it cheap because no one else is going to follow me.
Yeah.
Hashtag justice for Adam. Thank you.
Justice for Adam. Hashtag justice for Adam. Like, you don't do that to me.
I don't.
Sure, that'll be the assumption going forward, I guess. So the other thing, so each of the ingredients, so you've got like we said before, you got vegetables, meat, and seafood. Whether seafood is actually meat, I feel like
it's meat.
Proteins. Right,
like,
yeah,
like
it's, why? It's your protein. It's a butcher and it has seafood in it. I thought that was a little odd as well. The butcher has meat and seafood in it.
That's true. Yeah, I thought it was
a little weird.
All right,
it's just protein.
But then you have the grocery store that has one of everything, and then you have the bakery. Got the
desserts. I forgot about the desserts.
The patissier.
We should probably get into So every round, you'll have 3 to 4 of these shops based on how many players are in the game. So you have your 3 base shops, which is your grocers, your butchers, and then your
patissier.
Yes.
The bakery.
I think it's actually called the bakery.
Say it all French.
Patissier.
Thank you.
Each location has 3 spaces for a food item. And every time it's bought, at the very end of the round, you'll refresh those 3 slots. So you don't always know what type of food's going to show up in the butcher shop. You know it's going to be a protein, but you don't know if it's going to be the lobster you desperately need or just 3 steaks. Just steak everywhere.
And how many stars it's going to have.
Well, yes.
Which is what contributes to how much your menu is worth at the end of the day. So they have 1 to 3 stars on them. So the 3-star crepe is, what do you got there? 4-star. Oh my God. 4-star pork? I don't think we ever saw any of those. 4-star. There's some 4-star porks. Well, I am looking at the rule books. They only got 3.
You're looking
here
at Manuel?
They've been cheap out of me.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so when you complete your menu item based on these things, the number of stars you get adds up to give you what the menu is worth at the end of the day. What else were you saying? You're saying something about the stores.
Oh, the stores?
The stores.
I think I had finished what I was saying, just that you'll have the 3 base stores, and then if you're playing with 4 or more players, you'll use the extra supermarket, which will get 1 of each type of food group. Then every round, you'll refresh them and fill each one up with 3 items that belong there.
And you can always choose to, like, you have 3 chef's hats, I believe, if I have 4 chef's hats. Okay, sorry. So you have 4 actions, basically, on every turn. And you you get to choose, if you don't want to actually go to one of the stores, you can choose to basically put your hat in the bank and get a coin. So just a single coin. And not take any ingredients.
A single, lonely little coin.
Well, yeah. I mean, a single coin doesn't really do you a whole lot of good, I don't think. But
no, but sometimes it's the only way to get
coins, for sure.
I guess. You know, you can't afford anything because you have no coins and all the shops are full. Or no one bought from your shop and you're just sad.
And you're just
support your local businesses.
You were shafted, is what you're telling me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the general overview. You keep playing until 3 or 1 person has 3 menu items completed, and then you get 1 last shot at trying to complete any menu items that you might have lying around. But I think you can complete 1 menu a turn is the other thing. So
yeah,
these are all very like inconsequential. There's some other things about being able to combine items together. So if you have 2 pair. Sorry, a pair, you can combine them into something else of the same type that will be like a wild card. So if you just seem to be just fucking flush with broccoli, you can always turn that into a carrot. I don't know how that works.
Yeah, you just turn that steak into a lobster.
This place is staffed with wizards or whatever. I don't understand how that's supposed to make any sense. But
wizard.
But because you're such a great chef, you can be like, oh man, I just got someone. You know what? Fuck it. We're using pork instead of shrimp. And you're like, oh, he's so good.
Yeah. I think you can make it taste like anything, right? Sure.
Yeah, that's like, what truffle oil is for.
Yeah.
Oof.
It's like, man.
You make everything taste like truffle oil.
Like, I really, really need this to taste like pork. So if I put a little extra beef in there, I can make it taste like pork.
Yeah, I think that's how cooking works.
Yeah.
That's not a chef. Looking at, yep, we got the judges say yes. Judges are all nodding on that one.
One other thing I should point out is, so everybody gets two secret menus that they're trying to complete. And then there are three kind of open menus that you can choose from.
Oh, yeah, like so the global. Right?
Yeah, you can't, so you don't know what people are going for right away. But, you know, there can be a little bit of reading the table to see it's like, oh, you know, every single one of these open menu needs broccoli. There's two broccoli in that produce section. Do I buy the store or do I just go for the broccoli?
You're just trying to sneak in and scoop up a broccoli.
And only one person can fulfill that, each of those menu items. So you can, I mean, it's essentially the fastest person to it, right? So everybody could be working towards it. And, you know, everybody's sitting there looking for that crepe that hasn't come up yet. And then somebody like Justin comes along with two freaking ice creams and the rest of the thing. And he's like, I'm gonna make that with my two ice creams and make that into a crepe. And ha ha, the rest of you have...
The day is mine.
...items that are useless to you. Yes. So, it's a pretty lax game, I think. Like, there's not a whole lot of...
Pretty quick. There's not much going on, right? Yeah. Like, there's no rules that I can think of that are, like, you know, not obvious. Right, the way they have it set up, is you go from the top down, and then if there's nothing left, tough shit.
Yeah.
Right. Like it's not confusing the way they've got it set up. All the components work nice to.
Yeah, everything's
make it,
nice.
Make it really clear. Straightforward, right? I mean, you got, and everyone understands food. At least I hope so.
Yeah, I mean, there's no translation really needed for the game at all. Everything has nice, clear pictures. Everything is very easily understood. Everything's a nice physical size.
Yeah. The first player just moves to the left. There's no fancy, like, this happened in this round, then this person goes first. And you don't have to steal it. You don't have nothing like that. It just...
There's no jockeying for the first player.
Yeah. It just moves to the left. Everybody gets their chance. It's interesting. I mean, it's while we're talking about this, I find it very interesting that we're very animated, and I think that we end up having a whole lot to talk about when we really don't like something. But when we kind of do like something, and something's very like well made and just kind of built that way, we're all kind of very.
I think it's just because like
lower.
People just love to shit on things. Like if something is bad, people will jump all over it.
That's my whole thing.
But when something is good, people tend to not be as vocal about it because they can't find things to pick apart. Like one thing I will say that I truly appreciated about this game is I think this is the first game that we've done on this podcast that was really quite true to what it says on the box, that it's 20 to 40 minutes. Like time, sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Quite true to what it said on the box time frame wise.
Yeah.
Like it said 20 to 40 minutes. We banged off, what, two, three games of this?
Yeah, I think we did three.
And I think the first game maybe took us closer to that 40-minute mark, but once everyone understood the rules, it just went boom, boom, boom.
Oh, yeah, the rule books, I mean, the rules are super simple, and the rule book's maybe 5 pages at tops. It's nice.
It's 3 pages long, and it accordions, right?
It's like great.
Yeah.
It folds in on itself. It's, you know, like, it's you're not flipping through pages. Like, it's, and that's just my side observation, that it's like, we're all pretty, like, nobody's really animated. Nobody's really doing anything. And it's, I think that says a lot for the game. Like it's all very, yeah.
Well, yeah. Like it's a good game. It's, It's easily approachable. I mean, I guess at this point, we're just kind of jumping into our observations on the game, really.
Yeah. We covered all the rules, so just go for it, man.
It's fine. We don't need a segue for any of this. Just keep going.
Just keep going. Okay. Like, I mean, the fact of the matter is it's a nice, easy-to-pick-up game. I think that ages 8 and up, I mean, again, I don't have children, but I feel like you could probably, with very little difficulty, teach this to an 8-year-old. I think an 8-year-old would be able to grasp all the concepts that are in this game.
8-year-olds can play Monopoly.
Exactly.
So.
You know,
this is far simpler than Monopoly.
Yes.
Can 8-year-olds nowadays play Monopoly?
Sure, they can.
You think so?
If it's on the app, if it's an app,
if it's
yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Oof, I'm wondering if there's that.
And Justin is now officially getting a Twitter, so everyone can fill his inbox instead of all of ours. But like, okay, so the game, it says it plays in 20 to 40 minutes. It says it plays ages eight and up. Both of these, I think, are bang on. It says 2 to 5 players. We played with 4. I thought it was wicked at the 4 player count. I don't know. Maybe the 5th player count, because there are only 4 options. Maybe that makes things a little tight. Maybe that makes the bank a little more useful. I don't know. Again, I thought at 4 players, the player count was just right. It was great. It was a fast game.
Yeah.
It was fast moving. There wasn't a lot of downtime. You know, everyone kind of thinks of their turns as they go, like as the other person is going, but there's not a lot of time. Like, you're sitting there, you look at the board, you assess what's in front of you, you drop a chef's hat, boom, your turn is done. Go around the table. Yeah.
I also really like how it parsed the turns. You kind of have your placement phase, then you have your upkeep phase, basically.
Sure.
Where you go from store to store and you start, you know, just resolving what's going on. Because I think if you had to resolve it every time you put down your figure, like, it would just stall.
It would bog a bit.
But it has a really good pacing because of that.
I mean, it's a, like I said, it's a really decent, solid little set collection worker placement game. That's what it is. It does really well. I mean, like, I actually had to, like, reach out as a stretch to try and find something to really gripe about this game. And I came up with the art style is a little, I mean, you have, like, all the characters are these super cartoony characters. And then when you get into the food products, they go for something that leans more to the realistic side. But I mean, that is the complaint about this game. Then, I mean, like, if that's what you can come up with to complain about, I mean, I think you've really kind of knocked it out of the park.
For sure. I think that there's, I think it's a very good entry level learning worker placement style. Like, I think that it's a little more on the basic, like, there's not a whole bunch of different components to it, right? So it's not like you're not playing like Agricola or Caverna or something like that, where your worker placement is more on the complex side. Like, there's different levels to it. This is very, like, they're kind of all the same level. Okay, one.
So no, just to respond to your Agricola Caverna comment, I would not consider either of those an entry level worker placement.
No, but that's my point.
Okay.
No, that's what I'm saying. So I'm saying that this, I think, is entry level for that style of game.
Okay.
I think this teaches you a little more of that mechanic without going into it in a super complex way. It teaches you that you have to choose, you have to balance the idea of, do I get there the fastest? Or, you know, do I wait a little bit and try to pay a little bit lower of a price? And I think that I think it introduces the concepts that you kind of need to hone and need to play into when you get into those heavier worker placement, bigger games. I think that this is very well done for that. And I can see on Justin's face that he probably disagrees with me. But that's what I think this is. Is I think that this is a good kind of easygoing worker placement.
So to quickly interject one more time, like the like what most people would consider like the quintessential set collection / worker placement entry level game, most people would consider that to be Ticket to Ride. How do you feel this compares to Ticket to Ride?
I have to think about that for a second.
Is that a general question?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, no, later.
I don't see this as so much as a worker placement game, so much as a negotiation bidding game, because you're kind of managing your funds and you're kind of negotiating with other players you have to kind of be like, oh, you know, don't put your guy there because I'm just going to put it under. I'm just going to crank up that price. Whereas like a worker placement I see is getting there first to get the wood and no one else can get that wood.
Okay.
So I don't know. I see it more as that. The same thing with Ticket to Ride. Ticket to Ride is more of a complete the objectives first.
Yeah.
But where this one allows you to do the same thing and maybe mess with other people by, like, say, driving up the price or getting to the shop first because you know there's a bidding war, rather than the classic worker placement example like Agricola.
Yeah. I don't know. Okay. Yeah.
That's just the way I look at it.
Go ahead.
No, I think that the base thought process behind it is there. Like, I see what you're saying, but it's that idea of you can't always put your first, like, you have to choose where your first person's going to go, right?
Oh, definitely. There's some strategy there.
Yeah, like, sure. you have to pick which road do you want to run down, right? And if I choose to go this way, somebody can take advantage of that and choose to go the other way. And now, am I going to, you know, like, how am I going to counterbalance that? And how am I? And so I think that in the end, I think that they're very similar to this, to be the same thing. I don't know how many people think the way that you think. Okay. In the sense that I don't know how many people are actually going to stop and think of this as a, I want to mess with your head. Right? Like, I don't know how many people are going to look at that and say, hey, buddy, you realize that if you put your thing there,
but
I'm going to go right underneath you.
I guess, but we did that. That's almost exactly what happened when we were playing.
It didn't happen until much later when I think
when we were in our like second or third playthrough, it was starting to happen.
Because I'm starting, and this is probably where one of my only criticisms about this game are going to come from, is I think we almost started to create our own fun. This is a very basic and very like how many different dimensions are there to this game, right?
Hmm.
Not that many. And so there's a point where it gets to where when you have a group of people like this, where we play things like Gloomhaven on a regular basis, that we kind of have to start to add our own.
Are you saying we're competitive?
Yes. So I'm saying that I think that this is my one criticism of the game is that, yes, it can get very flat very quickly, I think. I think that it's, you're either just going to get it or you're not, in my eyes. And I think that there's a point where it gets to where we just kind of start screwing with each other. And we're just like, what are you doing, man? And I don't think that there's that many people out there that would buy a game like this for that purpose.
I think it just builds its own meta is what it does. And that I think that's more attributed to each individual play group. Especially our play group, because we know how each and every one of us, we've played board games together for years at this point, right? Yep. So we know how each other play board games. We know what we're looking for out of certain styles.
We all know that Justin's the scumbag, right? Got it.
Well, that's,
so I just
that's rude.
I just think that it's more, like I said, it's a more build your own meta thing where we know. You know, Justin's going to be doing this, and Thomas is going to be doing that, and Debbie's going to be doing this,
Picasso.
And I'm
Debbie's going to be messing with Adam.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Debbie's going to be doing everything in her power to try and screw me over.
# justice for Adam.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And like, you know, and like that's, you know, that's just how it goes. So I feel it's more about, the group meta than it is necessarily about the game.
Yeah, I think that's true, but I think that's also is kind of what I like about it. It's a very simplistic system that allows every group of players to kind of bring their own little competitive nature to something like this. And I also really like games like this that encourage you to talk to other people around your friends. That's my main criticism with a lot of Euros, is you're kind of playing your own solitaire games. But with this one, you have to interact with other players and you have to think about what everyone else is going to do. If you want to buy that shop or start going for something else, because you don't think anyone else wants broccoli this turn.
Sure.
You know, so it adds that little bit of strategy to a very, very simple game.
Yeah. Tom, you looked like it's interesting because you looked like when Adam brought up Ticket to Ride, you looked like you wanted to like there was definitely some sort of
anti-argument
or like segue to that you were thinking.
What I was going to say was that if you compare this against Ticket to Ride, like I would probably play Ticket to Ride over this just because you get to put cool trains together. You get to like put stuff down.
It is very physical.
Yeah, I like the physicality of that. That's nice. I like that. I like colorful trains.
Yeah, this is very non-tactile. I'll give it that.
Right.
Right? Like, right. It loses. It's definitely more in your head.
Yeah, less... and that's one of the things that's nice about board games over something like a video game is that you get to, like, sit there and play with the pieces. Mm-hmm. It's something that I don't think a lot of people think of.
It's such a nice felt box. Look at that little thing.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a darling.
Yeah, I mean, I, like, to go to my part of it, I enjoyed myself. I think this is a pretty good game. Like you guys say, it was pretty simplistic. That's probably my main beef with it is I don't think that I would not beef, but have beef. Get it? No,
I do.
Okay, yes. I did not. That was not intentional.
It's the pun episode, everybody.
Don't at me. Yeah, I'm a dad. I can make those jokes. Fuck you guys. Rip. My main beef with this was that it was, you know, you had a good time, but again, I think that with some of these games is like that more depends upon the people you're playing with. And I think that's true with this one. I think it's a little bit, for me, a bit too simple.
Yeah.
I think in terms of, I like Justin's point was really good about how there is this element of like negotiation and stuff. And I think that's really, really interesting. I didn't really think of that before, but you know, you do have the element of like, well, I think this person's going to do this. So if I want to make a bunch of money, I can put my thing on the store that I know he's going to take and then work my way through that. Or maybe I'll just talk to him and see if he wants to give me a deal because he doesn't want me to do that. Like, there's nothing stopping you from negotiating, which is kind of, never really thought of that. That being said, you know, it is set collection worker placement kind of mechanics, which, you know, never really set my pants on fire. there's definitely more complex, there's games that I'd be more inclined to set up an evening over than this. That being said, this is like a simple 20 to 40 minute game that might teach your kids about vegetables. So, I mean, it's not bad. I mean, it's, yeah, in terms of the theme, like I can't think of any, we've played a couple of games that are centered around food and menus, and I can only think of the one, which, what was that? That was the one with the timers.
Kitchen Rush,
which is like a completely different animal, but I'd probably be more inclined to play this over Kitchen Rush just because like Kitchen Rush was like super complicated and like a bit fiddly and
quite hectic.
So, I mean, if you're into something like, or if you're into food or chef stuff, like this is the first one I've played that I'd be like, yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, it's, like I said, I think it's good. It's not like great for someone of my age and experience, but I mean we've been doing this for a long time, so
you're just jaded,
just totally jaded.
No, but that's exactly what I'm saying, right? Like I think Tom and I are very much on the same page where it's just it's very robotic and it's fairly basic. There's not very many dimensions to it. Like, yeah, absolutely. Like, I played it and I had fun and there's a little bit of kind of jabbing here and there. But after you play it two or three times, I mean, really,
yeah.
How many different ways can you go after this?
Yeah. Trying to think if there's anything more that you're going to get out of it where, you know, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. It's not a game you would master.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that definitely plays into it. So I think there's, I mean, with board games, there's like a lot of different levels that you can get in. And I think Adam makes a good point where it's like pretty good, like entry level game. If your friends are interested in vegetables and like cooking, then that's probably a good place to start. I mean, it's simple. Like you said, the pages are the rules are right here. You see that they're like 6 pages long. Not a big deal. So it's not going to take you an hour to learn them. It doesn't take a long time to set up. You know, there's really, really good benefits to a simple game. It's just, you know, not really something that I'd say like, hey guys, come over and let's play Menu Master. Right?
You wouldn't center a party around it?
No, but no, exactly. And I think I'd probably, I don't think I'd invite you guys over to play it. If we happen to have a group of people around that said that they wanted to play a chef game, like,
Yeah, or you had like 20, 30 minutes to kind of quickly bang out a simple game. This is something super easy to bring to the table. This is something that I think is super easy to again, it's in my eyes, it kind of stands in the same area as Catan and things like that. I think it's fairly, I know, Justin, you don't agree with me, but man, I see this as a fairly entry level.
No, I just twitched when you mentioned Catan.
Oh, okay, got it. I think that it's a decent game that you can teach people certain types of mechanics. It's fairly quick moving. You can prod at each other. You're not going to play it three or four times. You only have a short period of time. Let's quickly play a game. Hey, this one doesn't have a whole lot of components. It doesn't make a big mess. It's quick to get out. Get it out. Play it while you're waiting for your taxi to come to the house before you go get bombed at the bar. I don't know. Like, I think that it's just a very, like,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, I like where you're going with that. I think when I think about, you know, the places where this fit in though, is like the Venn diagram of people that I would play this with at the particular time that I would play this with starts shrinking the more you talk about it, which makes me wonder, because like, it is good, but like, you know, you have a short amount of time to play it. Like, there's a bunch of games that I have to do that. And is this the one I'd probably go for? Like, probably not.
No, it's funny that you say it, because I'm in the same boat. I'm looking at, like, I tend to pre-rate my games, and I'm looking at my rating, and I'm like, man, is my rating too high? Because I'm in the same boat. I'm kind of, the more I'm thinking about it, is it's like, man, it's not a bad game, but is this something that I'd be like, you, my friend, need to go out and buy that game? Because
yeah, and I mean, I think I think we're in a you and I are in agreement, at least, where it's like, it's good. It's very simple. And I think it has to, you almost have to have a particular interest in this, in either the mechanics of set collection or the like negotiation, like Bilbo said, or, you know, just the theme of a bunch of chefs trying to get a bunch of food together. If you're interested in any of that, I think it's probably like right up your alley, because it is short, and that definitely has a very good place for, you know, in someone's collection. You got to have something that's quick to play. But I mean, in terms of like, if quick to play is the only thing I'm going to be basing it off of, like, I'm not pulling this out again.
I think that's the first time you called me Bilbo.
No, I'm sure I've done it before.
Okay.
We've done it before in at least one episode.
Okay.
Okay, so my two cents, and I'll make it short and sweet. I think it is a good filler game. I think if you're playing some heavier games, like if you're playing a game that has a lot of weight to it, like a heavy Euro or a heavy Ameritrash game along the lines of Twilight Imperium or something. Again,
that's not a game. That's an event.
There's no time in between games of Twilight Imperium. What the fuck are you talking about? You're just gonna like take 20 minutes off to go play a game of Menu Master? No. Not a bad idea.
Yeah, write that down. That's what I was just about to say. Is you probably could in between turns with Twilight Imperium. You
definitely could. I think that's probably a good idea.
But if you're playing a heavy game, and then you finish up this game and you're going to play something else, and you're like, you know what? We just need something light, yeah, just to kind of break the weight.
Like a palate cleanser?
Oh, wow. Ding, ding, ding.
Then, you know, I think that this is a game that you could slot in reasonably well.
Sorry. Say, so I just now am realizing this, that as kind of the, I like to label myself as the not board game geek friendly co-host. So now that you've just brought up Euro games and Ameritrash, so we talk about Euro a lot. I don't know how many people are actually going to understand what the concept of, like, can one of you guys, all of you guys, I don't care, try to give me, there's more than like just
a definition.
Yeah. So, okay. So what is a Euro game?
Euro games tend to be low chance, high skill cap games that have very low amount of randomness. So it's going to be your worker placement where you go here and you're going to get this thing. Whereas I find Ameritrash games tend to have a high level of randomness. There's going to be a lot of dice rolling. There's going to be a lot of random cards that are going to change how the game plays out. And you're not always going to know the sort of winning objectives. Whereas okay, most Euro games have, say, a point system.
So that's a very board game geek answer.
Oh.
Just so you know.
So here's straight from Wikipedia.
Yep. Sounds
okay, good. Okay, so source, Wikipedia. A Euro game, also called a German-style board game, German game, or Euro-style game, is a class of tabletop game that generally have indirect player interactions and abstract physical components. Euro-style games emphasize strategy while downplaying luck and conflict. They tend to have economic themes rather than military and usually keep all the players in the game until the game ends, aka there's no player elimination. Euro games are sometimes contrasted with American-style board games, which generally involve more luck, conflict, and drama.
Okay, so the short of that is a Euro game is one where they're fairly quiet in the sense that you are not interacting with your other players. It's a very, how you play your game is kind of how you play your game. It's not very, you're not doing a whole lot of interacting. And that's,
people don't tend to fuck with you directly.
And that's a very common reason why we bring up Euro games versus Ameritrash games, because they are, like, some people really hate them and some people really like them. And that really does come down to the interaction piece. There's usually not a whole lot of dying. There's usually not a whole lot, like, a lot of it comes down to, I'm going to spend money or I'm going to spend resources and I'm going to, like, worker place and things like that.
A lot of economy management.
Right. Okay. So then next is your, what I call Ameritrash. I'm sure that's probably not the right terminology. Sure
it is. It's a slang term that's generally accepted amongst board gaming circles.
All right. So Ameritrash.
Okay. So an Ameri game, short for American style board game, sometimes referred to as Ameritrash, is a loose category, a loose category of tabletop game that generally features a prominent theme, encourages direct conflict between players, even in co-op style games, example Dead of Winter, and has a significant degree of luck. It is distinguished from a Euro game or German style game in that American style games often have longer play times and mechanics are designed to suit the theme. Not all games from the United States fall under this category. Party games and family games with simpler rule sets are usually exempt. Examples are like Axis and Allies, Dune, Cosmic Encounter, Talisman, Twilight Imperium.
So basically,
you just read out my top five. Thanks. Thanks. I'll skip the next recording. Yeah.
So basically, Ameritrash comes down to your typical, like, let's fight, like, let's have combat. People die or things die.
Roll a shitload of dice.
Yeah.
You got like a huge decks of cards.
It's a lot of randomness. It's a lot of like
big board.
How do you deal with the randomness that comes at you, right? So I'm going to roll a bunch of dice and a certain consequence is going to happen, or it's only going to let me do certain things. How do I deal with that and get around it to still get to my end objective?
Well,
these are typically a lot more like animated, I would say verbal, interactive games, in the sense that either people are working together, because you can have co-op games like this where people are like on the same team and you're working against something. So like Adam said, Dead of Winter, you're working against zombies. I mean, everybody's trying to kill zombies. Or you can be against each other, which is something like Carnage, where I'm
Carthage.
Trying to... Carthage, sorry. Where you're trying to literally kill your opponents. Like, I'm literally trying to kill you and you're trying to kill me. Like,
Risk, Axis and Allies.
Right. You know, so other than
World
those two.
Domination.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Other than those two, is there another class of games that you...
Party games.
Okay. So party games.
Well, I mean, those are two really broad categories for easy categorization amongst like board game nerds. Like, is it a Euro or is it an Ameritrash? Like, that's
or
kind
is
of
it a dexterity
and
game?
I think that's something that's come up
categories.
I think that's something that came up like quite a while ago, to be able to separate these things out when designer board games were coming into America, because you'd have like this big disconnect between games that were made in Germany, like Agricola, that were just like, hey, we're not actually like rolling any dice or doing anything to like fuck each other over. That's really weird, huh? Whereas like
but
most
not,
of people in
not directly nor- at least
normal yeah
no
most
yeah,
of
not
people
directly.
In North
it's
America
more strategy driven. It's more strategy driven in the sense of like planning your turns.
Yeah, yeah. You can block each other, but like you're not actively taking the money from your brother, like in Monopoly, mm-hmm. and leaving him to cry in the corner.
You may have done that once or twice, or had it to you.
Well, I'm I'm the younger brother, so obviously it kept happening to me.
Oh yeah, okay, right.
That's how that works.
But I just I want to give our listeners, because I there are going to be listeners that are very board game heavy and that are going to understand things like that. But I think that there's also going to be people that do not know what the Euro and the Americans are like, what we're referring to. So I just wanted to make sure that I clarified.
No, it's a fair point to make, I think.
No, I think it is. It makes sense because it is something that Adam says a lot.
Oh, Euro, between Eurogames and Ameritrash games?
Well, we don't bring up Ameritrash very often. It's usually Eurogames, and that's why I've left it alone for so long. But yeah, now that we're actually distinctly like saying Ameritrash or American.
Adam never shuts up. He's always talking about how much he loves all these Eurogames.
I do love Eurogames. Like, that's my jam. That's
Power Grid.
I like Power Grid.
Power Grid's a good game.
Yeah, it's 2.5 hours long. It's too fucking long.
And that's we will get back to menu masters.
This is not important right now. We should probably
digression.
Yes.
Bringing it back around.
Yes. Right. So you got your definition. Now you know what we're talking about. Sorry about that for the last 10 episodes.
But I do not remember what we were talking about. So
we were approaching final points.
We're just approaching scorings and final points.
We could probably spend 3 hours just talking about the nuances and definitions.
And we probably
sounds
should.
Like an episode.
There we go.
it probably would have been a smart, safe intro to the world of collapsing board game, but hindsight's a bitch. What do you want to do?
We can always slot it in somewhere. Just say, hey, special episode.
Here's your accessory.
Man, the quality got really bad there from the first episode to the next one.
These guys were just talking about some random shit. I don't know what the hell happened.
But no, okay, so let's scoring. Final thoughts.
Scores.
Tom, one of your.
What do you think, Tom?
Where are you going with this?
I mean, like I said, I think this is a. I think I'm going to keep this around. My scoring system is a binary. I'm going to throw it in the garbage, or I'm going to keep it. I think this is good enough to keep, and I don't have anything else that fills this particular like box of fast, easy to understand, and like you know covers a theme that is. Not really well represented in my collection, so I think it's probably a keeper for me. It's good, but I don't think it's like amazing. But that's probably because it is a simpler, more introductory style board game than anything.
What was your favorite part about it?
My favorite part about it.
Putting it away. No, I'm just kidding.
That is an interesting. Yeah, putting it in the box it away and pulling out something better.
What stood out the most from you? Like when you first think of it, like what's the first thing that comes to your head?
I think it's the chef hats because I like putting the chef hats on top of each other. That's always nice. I like it's the tactility of things. I mean, that's kind of one of the things that I think is most unique about board gaming in general is just the. You get stuff to play with, and I mean that's probably why a good portion of my board game collection is filled with miniatures. Having that box have a bunch of hats in it was kind of cool. I mean, I think that that's probably the best part of the game is like trying to figure out where you're putting the stuff to try to make sure that your friends aren't getting the thing that they need or trying to get them to pay you the most. And so like that's really the game. Like the other stuff is all pretty. Ancillary, really, but I mean that's probably the best part is just the I mean that is the game is putting down the hats, so the hats are good. I like the hats.
Stack them high.
Yeah.
I'm gonna stick with my initial rating. My initial rating, I give it a 4 out of 5. So if you get the chance to play it for sure. It's one to put out there. And take this as you may. My favorite part of the game is how fast it is. Like, not because it's bad.
It's over really quick.
That's not a bad thing, though.
But that's, I mean, like, it's not, like, it's not one of the, your Euro games that you sit there and it's like, I have to wait 5 minutes for you to think through your entire turn. Like, this is, it's pretty, like, I'm going to smack my hat down right here. Lanny, call Lanny out. That's nice.
It doesn't overstay its welcome.
Yeah, it's quick, and that's, I like that about it. It's, there's not so many bits to it that you have to think through. You know, 6 different steps of how this is going to happen. It's pretty quick. And that's probably my favorite part about it. And so I'm going to stick with, yeah, sure. Like if you can play it because it is a relaxed version of, in my world, a Euro worker placement style game. And that's great. Like there is a place for that in this world and play it. Just It's a 4 out of 5. I'll shut up.
It's good. It's a good game. Like I said, I feel it's a good game. I think it's fast enough. I think it's light enough that it can slot into, like I said, in between some heavier games. If you're playing a game and you just need something just to break it, or if you know you all of a sudden you're waiting on your fifth player to show up to your game night and you have 4 players there, mm-hmm. or what have you, or you're waiting on your sixth player and you have 5 players there, whatever. You know, it's enough that you can get it in. You can get a quick game in. It's fun. It's easy. You don't have to spend a long time explaining rules to people or anything like that. It's people can pick it up and run with it.
And you can shoot the shit while you're doing it, right? Yeah, you're not thinking so far into it that you're not.
No, it's not a brain burner by any stretch of the imagination.
So you can just have a normal conversation while you're doing your thing.
It's good. It's good. It slots into so many little niche areas. I do think that replayability is an issue at the end of the day. I think that you're only going to be able to play this so many times with the same group before you end up having what is happening with us, where you kind of develop your own meta, and you end up kind of like, you know, the table kind of starts to lean heavily in one direction or another.
That can be half the fun, though.
Absolutely. I'm not saying it's not. I can see it getting a little bit boring if you're constantly bagging on one person consistently.
Well, yeah. I mean, that can also happen just in general with any group of board game players.
Oh, yeah. Okay, sure.
I know myself. I am often the target in many competitive board games.
That's because you take a very different approach towards a lot of games than a lot of people do.
That's very true. I try to find a little niche thing and run with it.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
A lot of people don't like that.
I.e. viticulture. Oof. Do not create any wine. Only create the tours.
I made one bottle of wine
right, to
show in my tasting room.
That's it.
I was running a gift shop, not a winery.
God. At the end of the day, I give Menu Masters a 7 out of 10. It's a good game. It's a good game. I think it has a spot. I think it has a pretty, it has more than one spot. Like, you can slot it into more than one place. It's not that narrow. But with that being said, my biggest gripes, of course, are replayability. That's my concern.
No, I think that's right. For me, it's a solid thumbs up.
Oof.
It's a solid thumbs up, Adam.
Solid thumbs
perfect,
up.
Perfect.
Wow.
No, I think in general, I've just been making a few notes, and it's a really great entry level game. Like, it's easy to learn. It has a theme that everyone can get behind. You know, you're not having to talk about farming sheep, ancient Rome, or World War II. It's just having fun buying groceries and making a menu. So, I think the board says it's for 8 and up, and I think that's right on. And because it's so easy to teach, it's just great as an entry level to Euro games if you don't like trains and you find Catan a little too stodgy for your liking.
That's a game that gets stale. Catan or Catan or however you want to pronounce that. That game can get really stale.
But
really cool.
Yeah, and the simple nature is also something I like because it allows that meta thing that we've been talking about where you can negotiate with your friends. You're not, stuck in your mind palace trying to think 6 turns ahead to find the optimal play for your economic machine. You can just talk to your friends and put a hat down and just tell them, look them straight in the eye and tell them you're just driving up the price because you don't even want that thing.
Your mind palace. That's my favorite part of what you just said.
Oh, you're welcome.
Sliding that hat over and you're like, I don't even need pork.
But I know if I put my hat here, you can't afford it.
Oh.
I think my favorite part about board games is, talking to the people that are there, and that I guess is one of my problems that I have with some of the heavier Euros. Even though I'll find them fun, I'm kind of having my own fun, whereas this game is you're having fun with other people.
Yeah,
and that's about it for me.
Good stuff. I like where we came to.
Yeah.
We're in a good place.
It's a good place. It's a good place to be in. Everyone's happy. I like that.
It's just, yeah. What do you mean? It's nice to not really be shitting on board games for
this a second. This is weird. What's going on here?
It's very Euro-esque.
Why do these guys have so many games if all they do is shit on them? It's really weird.
Well, we really did kind of hit a bit of a string of pretty subpar games. Like, I'm just kind of looking through our last few episodes, and it's like, man, we really... It was a dark cloud that hung over this for a bit.
There's a few stickers in there.
There's some mediocrity in there.
I think that we need to be fair to the fact that I think often what ends up happening is that we invest in a lot of board games, this group in particular. Not myself, my husband. I'm just kidding.
Hashtag justice for Adam.
I'm just kidding. We invest in a lot of board games in our group. And in that investment, I think we often end up pulling out the games that we almost safely know are probably going to be really good. And the ones that we don't end up bringing to the table often are the ones that are maybe a little more suspect. And so we kind of play into that with this podcast, because we've kind of built it in a way that it's like, hey, there's a lot of games that we haven't played. I mean, why have we not played them? Some of them are just solid misses, and we look back and we're like, shit, like, why didn't we open up that game sooner? Like, crap, that sucks. We could have been playing this for a long time. But a lot of that comes down to the fact that we've gone through a lot of board games, we've seen a lot, and we have a fairly decent idea of which ones are probably going to be a little,
yeah.
Right. And so we have to be fair to that, is that I think that there are going to be some games that there are going to be stretches of negativity. And that's just because we have, I mean, Tom himself has a very, very large collection. And if you could see him right now, he's got like fire coming out of his palms.
okay.
The godly stance. But I mean, it's the same as us. Like, we have a pretty vast collection, and we're starting to get a whole lot of shrink too. And it's, I mean, why do we have a lot of shrink? Well, it's probably because there's other games on our shelves that we're like, we should play that because it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, some board games can take a lot of time, not only to learn, but to teach and then to play.
Yeah.
So a lot of times it's, you know, no board game exists in a vacuum. And I mean, that's like with these recommendations, like, I know for me, like, I try to think about, you know, I don't know if I would buy this,
yeah,
but I know it has a place out there. It's just because I know, like, with my group of players, like, I know this isn't going to go over well. So I wouldn't maybe necessarily buy it well, even if I'll review it highly, mm-hmm. just because I know there's a lot of people out there that'll find some liking. And but there's always a chance for a better game, especially with the amount we've played.
Right. And I think that that's a lot of the other thing we're trying to do. I think a lot of we're trying to steer people away from the hole that we may have gotten ourselves into a little bit, which is, I mean, there's a lot of games that just don't need to be bought. And we can probably just tell you, just don't. Just don't worry about it.
Yeah, if you've been listening to the last, I don't know, few episodes, you might find one or two that you might want to avoid a little bit.
How do you feel about unicorns, though?
Terrible game.
And if you've been listening to the last few episodes and you like them, please like and subscribe this episode or this podcast. Thank you. I know, champion segue, and great. I had to jump on that to stop this train. Like and subscribe this on whatever you happen to be getting your podcast on. Got some plugs to go through. So if you need to get a hold of me for any reason I cannot fathom, you can hit me up at Team Rage Tom on Twitter, or at the Collapsing Game Shelf podcast official stuff, which I don't remember, so I'm gonna throw it over to Debbie.
You can get us at CGS podcast on Twitter, or you can email us at collapsinggameshelf@gmail.com. And then myself, I'm Mrs. Wynn. That's Mrs. MRS WHYN, something like that.
On Twitter.
On Twitter.
Yep.
and Instagram. Not that anybody really probably wants to look at my Instagram because it's full of my dog.
That will make them want.
I was just saying that probably makes them want to go and look at your Instagram.
Mrs. Wynn's got a dog, so go check that out.
For myself, you can catch me at the website www.forthewin.com, forthewyn, twitch.tv/forthewin, Twitter and Instagram at forthewin.
And I'm the resident Luddite. I have no social media handle. So if you need to get a hold of me, I will be checking the emails and the official Twitter. So feel free to just put my name in there and I'll take a look at it.
And definitely give us some, you know, like if there's thoughts that you guys have, criticisms. I mean, be nice with your criticisms. Come on now. But, you know,
constructive criticism.
Constructive criticism. If you guys have something to say, you guys want us to poke at something, you think that there's a game that you like. If you, I don't know, disagree with something we say and you want to make a point, go right ahead. Be nice about it.
Start up a good conversation.
Yeah, we will. I will definitely be looking at our emails and our Twitters. And, you know, as long as I don't think it'll hurt Tom's feelings, I'll bring it to the table.
Please don't hurt me.
He is very sensitive.
I can't take it anymore.
Oh, hey, Tom. So what are we going to play next week?
Well, let me check the old randomizer. We're going to be playing, Hey, That's My Fish.
Fish!
Oh, which is a game about penguins and...
And fish!
And fish.
Yeah, it's so good. And a whale.
Yeah.
There's a whale?
There's a whale?
Yeah, if you fall through the ice and the whale eats you. Whale
pops up.
Oh, wow. So we have two people at this table that know this game.
There's so many nuances to this game.
I like this game. It's great. Like, incoming positive review next week. Get ready for it.
So if you're in for a positive review, we're going to have that for you next week with Hey, Matt's My Fish. So anything else? Any final thoughts?
No.
All right.
I'm excited to hear from you guys, and I'm excited for next week.
All right. Sounds good. Stay safe. Have fun.
Keep playing board games.
Bye.
Bye.
See y'all later.